Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
6:15 now. Some clouds in the area. A blanket of gray clouds, as a matter of fact. But no rain forecast. Highs of 77 today. Increasing cloudiness, although it would be hard to see more clouds than they have now. Highs of 78 tomorrow. 20% chance for showers. That goes into a 50% chance for showers early Saturday morning, and it's going to be one of those days where we reach our high temperature early in the morning and the temperature drops. And then Sunday, tailgating for the Saints-Carolina game. Even if you do it at your home, the weather's going to be perfect. Highs of 64 and nothing but sunshine. Crime, according to a new poll, 52% of the United States says it is a serious concern. We have had, you know, a lot of crime, it seems like, lately. I can read you some stories about the young man being killed near Audubon Park, the burgeoning entrepreneur, somebody getting stabbed, a father getting stabbed by his son with a spear, more killings in the city. And we're asking you, is crime a big concern where you live, and do you feel safe in your neighborhood? And what do the numbers show for New Orleans? With that, we welcome in our friend Peter Scharf, adjunct professor and criminologist at LSU Health New Orleans School of Public Health. Good morning, Peter.
Good morning, Tommy. You want the good news or the bad news?
Well, first thing I was going to ask is, how are you doing?
I'm doing good. I went with Eddie Compass and Amir Brock, and we gave lectures in the med school in Alabama for a week. So we just got back, and really went well.
I hear Alabama is lovely this time of year.
Yeah, it's great going the day after we beat him in the game.
But anyway. I'll bet they were glad to see you. Tell me give me good news and bad news. I guess give me the good news first.
Well, the good news is really there. You know, last year we had 146 murders. This year we may have as few as 110, between 105 and 110. And we used to have the prize. We were number one in murders in the United States. Now, and last year, we're actually number four. This year, we're going to be six, seven, or eight, depending on, you know, the last 6 weeks of the year. But that's a huge decline. I mean, to go from reduce the murder total by 30 murders is amazing. And, 146 to say 106. In the first half of the year, we had 57 murders. Since then, I'm assuming we had 96 murders for the year. We had fewer than 40 murders for the last 4.5 months. Now, that's really, really good. And all the trends are down. Manpower's up, community satisfaction's up. The integrity indicators of the survey just came out yesterday, I think, from the consent decree folks, that really indicates that people have a greater degree of trust in the police department, and all that's good. The bad news is, and let me give you a shocker. Everybody says that, please don't go to Chicago, they'll kill you there. Chicago had a 20 per 100,000 murder rate. We're going to be a good 20% higher, 25 to 30% this year. So, to get to a level of mayhem as high as Chicago is going to take a while, to get down there. They got to keep doing what they're doing, focusing on the most serious criminals, using intelligence-led policing, using technology, increasing their manpower, increasing the quality of manpower. And hopefully we're going to be in the mainstream of American cities within a few years. If we can keep it going.
We're
going
to take a break here, Peter. When we come back, I want you to answer this question, and that is, murders are down, but what about shootings? Because the question I always have about shootings is they are related to murder. Is it because people are poor shots? Is it because the quality of emergency medicine is getting better? And is it but for, I guess, the grace of God that somebody gets shot and doesn't get killed? 620 more, we come back. If you have any questions or comments about crime in the city or the area, you can text them to 870-870, and I'll pass them along to Peter Scharf, adjunct professor and criminologist at LSU Health New Orleans School of Public Health. 620, time for traffic now, WWL. 625, Tommy Tucker, WWL. Sometime this morning, between now and 10 o'clock, you are going to win tickets to see LSU and Arkansas tangle. And see, even though LSU is a big favorite, this is going to be a fun game because there's nothing like, hopefully, watching the Tigers really beat up on somebody. Anyway, you'll listen for Survivor in the Eye of the Tiger. And when you hear it, I'm going to give you the number to call in and win. Caller 8 is going to win a pair of tickets to the LSU-Arkansas game, compliments of LSU Sports Properties. Go Tigers! Peter Scharf, our guest, adjunct professor, criminologist at LSU Health New Orleans School of Public Health, talking about crime. And Peter, before we went to the break, I asked you about murders being down. And how does that correlate to shootings? And is it, are they down, or is it because people are either not very good shots or the level of emergency medicine is better? And I don't mean that facetiously.
Yeah. No. First of all, excellent question. That, the elephant in the room. The first half of the year, 34s, which is what the aggravated assaults with a gun shootings, were up about 2%. The good news is we have world-class trauma surgeons and EMT personnel. The bad news, they've had a lot of practice. Mm-hmm. So, you know, John Hunt, Becca Schroll, Juan Duchesny are literally the best in the world, I think. You know, and
so that's the question. Can you really say murders are down? Or, again, but for the grace of God, the emergency surgeons, the aim of the person, whatever you want to attribute it to, would the murder rate be up there but for that? How do you determine?
Well, I'm biased because I'm an LSU health science professor.
Right.
You know, but the argument that we've had a medical miracle as well as a police miracle is there. So while the murder indices are down and the shootings are roughly constant, there's another thing that we're really counting more carefully of the shootings. You know, if you go to the trauma center, go to UMC, again, world class, it'll get counted. Some of the other hospitals in the past, if you went there with a gunshot wound, you may or may not have received your own medical care. It wouldn't get counted. So the 34, there's a ratio between 30s, the murders, and 34s, the aggravated assaults with a gun. And it's changed over the years. And I think what we're doing is we're sampling more of the non-fatal gunshot injuries. So those are creeping up, and the ratio has changed somewhat. But that's why you need criminologists, you know, to figure this stuff out. So I'm going back to my office and really think about that one, but it's a great question.
One thing that amazes me, and is an aside, I guess, is that when I was a kid and so forth, I always thought that if you got shot, you died. Now there are people getting shot with AR-15s, and it's happened 15 times and they live. Guys getting and women being shot in the head and they live. And that just astounds me. And I guess that speaks, Peter, to the advance in medical science and medical care.
Right. And one of my lectures with Eddie and Amir in Alabama, we talked about that to the doctors. We were lecturing to doctors. What do you say to the kid in the gurney who's been shot? And what they honestly do all over the country is they patch him up and send him out. We've got to intervene. Some kids get shot 7, 8, 9 times before they die and or never die or get crippled for life. And how do you intervene? How do you get them to turn their life around and have the you know, the gunshot injury become a turning point in their lives? I don't make it a cliche and say learning experience is not. But the thing is, there's a method we call hospital ceasefire. And we did a doctoral student, Amanda Hammack, who did a dissertation on it. And the results were not clear. It wasn't clear that it was effective. We need better in-your-face interventions And the doctors are very uncomfortable. I was lecturing to the medical students in Alabama, I would ask the residents, I'd say, do you ask a kid if he's packing? No, I wouldn't ask that. That's, embarrassing.
Well, we'll pick it up there when we come back. Peter, remember where we are, that the medical student said, no, I would not ask him if they're packing because it's embarrassing. We'll talk more about crime when we come back. Time now, WWL First News. 6:45, Tommy Tucker, WWL. If you go to WWL.com, you'll see a headline there, and you can read more about the story. Shots fired at a Slidell McDonald's leaves one injured. We're talking to Peter Scharf about a new survey that's out. 52% of Americans say crime is a major concern, and of course, that's good nationally, but what about locally? Peter, of course, an adjunct professor and criminologist at LSU Health New Orleans School of Public Health. So, Peter, before we went to the break, you were talking about, I guess, what, emergency room doctors being hesitant to ask the people coming in if they were packing?
Well, yeah, and by the way, say the University of Alabama medical school people were amazing. They took a risk. We've got to reinvent the way we deal with gunshot injuries and people who are really at risk of getting back into the game. We're proactive. If somebody has incipient type 2 diabetes, we're very proactive. We change the diet, we make them exercise. Cardiac issues, the same thing. We're passive with gunshots. That's what came out of the visit. We wait for stuff to happen. The medical profession has to shift its paradigm from reactive proactive.
Peter, let me jump in here if I may, and maybe I'm taking just a silly approach
to
this.
I love it.
If you go in there and you got a bullet in your spleen or you get shot, which I presume hurts, having never been shot and hoping never to be shot, I presume it hurts a lot. So if you're in the emergency room with people running around trying to save your life, it would seem to me that would teach you far more of a lesson than would any kind of counseling. Or is that a foolish thing to say?
Well, but this is a defined demographic. There really is. There are people who are in the game. And the key is if we simply treat them, patch them up, and many of these injuries are survivable, they're going to go back in the game. They're going to get the gun back. They're going to get the guy who got them, right? And they're going to get killed eventually. So I think what I learned from the visit, and Amir and Eddie did too, is that it's the interaction of the medical profession and law enforcement that's critical. Sort of how do these two different approaches, how do they go together? But I think we're losing an opportunity to intervene where we have people who are, and you're right, when you're on the gurney, you're about to die, that's the wrong time to talk to anybody.
Well, here's what I'm saying. It would seem to me that would be deterrent enough. What would you like to see? What would it look like in terms of intervention by medical personnel with somebody who is in a dangerous trade, whatever it be, drugs or what have you, that would lead to them getting shot in the first place? What would it look like if a medical professional tries to change his cycle?
Well, I hang with the trauma surgeons. They're great. What the kids say, what they're thinking, while they're coming out of the operation, they say, I'm going to get the blankety blank who got me, and also, why'd you get shot? The doctor's right now. What happened? Oh, I was on the way to the store and somebody shot me. They closed down. The other issue is, the whole issue of, if they disclose something, what are the duties of the medical profession to disclose to the police? So there are all kinds of issues. The same thing, by the way, is true with opioids. We had that big conference that you covered for us at LSU that I helped run. And there again, we really don't know what to do with people who are in the opioid game either. So I think with these two crises, the gunshot crisis, injury crisis, and the opioid crisis, we need really rethink how we respond from a public health medical point of view.
We're going to take a break here because I want to ask you about what you just said in terms of opioid crisis, because we hear so much about drug trade, right, and violence.
Right.
But does the opioid crisis lend itself to gun violence, or is that a typical or a different kind of drug? So I think that's an interesting question. Peter will answer it when we come back. Peter Scharf, adjunct professor and criminologist at LSU Health New Orleans School of Public Health. It's 6:50. That is time for traffic here on WWL. 6:55. Peter Scharf, nice enough to spend some time with us here on WWL. I'm Tommy Tucker. He is an adjunct professor and criminologist at LSU Health New Orleans School of Public Health, and he joins us occasionally as we try to sort or make our way through this crime morass. When it comes to drugs, or drugs as it relates to the drug trade and violence, or does one or more drugs lend itself to a particular kind of violence?
Yeah, man, you're on fire this morning.
Well, you know.
You know, when I talk to Paul Noel or Sean Ferguson or John Thomas or any crime leaders in the crime prevention leaders, drug market instability is death. When you have a new drug market, new dealers, new distribution channels, murder goes up. Give you a case in point. In St. Tammany, for years, they had 2-3 murders a year. They went to 18 2 years ago. And dialogue with Randy Smith, who was just reelected chair. And you look at the increase in murders, and they're all this new, many are these new opioid drug murders.
And really?
You know, absolutely. And you, they gave us access, so we looked at them. You know, and the other thing is, there's a guy named Brownstein who did research that the police reports, especially the GIFs, this is a summary, they underestimate the drug motive. So something looks like a burglary, a domestic dispute, something, an argument. It's not dope. And unless you have intensive investigations, you're not going to get the drug motive. So some of these incidents, we were describing, may or may not, many will have this drug theme and a drug conflict. You know, the other thing is that unless you're very thoughtful, police activity can increase the link between drugs and violence. So you go bust a bunch of runners, these guys who run to your car and want to give you dope. And what happens? The crew leader has to hire new drug runners. They don't know them that well. They shoot them in the leg, and then they shoot them in the head. That's their form of human relations. And they, that's their human relations department.
So you the first one is in the legs, and then the second one's in the head? Is that what you're telling me in different instances?
Yeah, they warn them sometimes. They skip that step. But again, the issue is, so your drug control strategy has to be very thoughtful. You know, one of the reasons New York reduced its murder rates, we think, again, criminal geeks like me, is unless you're going to kill someone, they leave the dope dealers alone in Queens. You know, this is like, you know, I've worked with NYPD. And I'm not arguing for tolerance in this area, but this is one of the most difficult areas in criminal justice. You know, is this link just the question you asked? How do you minimize the link between drug market instability, competition between drug groups? The other thing that can happen is you get rid of a drug group on a street corner. They move into another street corner with a drug group already operating, and you have a drug war.
More violence. Right? Peter, this is fascinating every time we talk to you. And I know you're going to come. Thank you, sir. I know you're going to come back before in a short period of time because crime is a continuing problem. Peter Scharf, thank you, sir. When we come back, we'll talk to Lara Brown, director of the Graduate School of Political Management at George Washington University. In case you haven't heard, there are some impeachment hearings going on Capitol Hill. There was all
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. and great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.